an Englishman in the Balkans podcast with David Bailey.
Welcome to an Englishman in the Balkans podcast. I'm David.
I'm Tamara.
And this podcast is where we bring you stories of life, culture and adventure in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
From the unique perspective of exploring this beautiful corner of the world.
Whether you're here for travel tips, cultural insights or simply to share in the stories of everyday life, we're glad you've joined us. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey and in this episode, we're diving deep into the world of tourism in Bosnia and Herzegovina, past, present and future. To help unpack this rich and often misunderstood topic, I sat down with Aleksandra Drinic, a leading tourism expert based right here in Bosnia. Aleksandra brings not only deep insight into the current state of tourism in the country, but also a passionate belief in its untapped potential. We'll explore the incredible variety Bosnia and Herzegovina has to offer, especially for those travellers seeking destinations that are off the beaten path, from cultural heritage to natural wonders, and the role tourism plays in building social harmony. Aleksandra shares what's working, what's changing, and why this country might just be Europe's best-kept secret. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoy this conversation, please share it with a friend or leave a quick review. It does help others discover these stories from the heart of the Balkans. So let's crack on. Who is Aleksandra Drinic?
Okay, I'm living in Banja Luka. Almost all my life. Wasn't born there though because my parents worked for a while in another town in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I've been working in tourism sector development for more than past two decades. I also had quite some experience working as a public relations person or communication departments in different, mostly international organizations, although I do have experience with the local organizations as well. I studied several programs abroad. I completed my public relations studies with the Chartered Institute of Public Relations in the UK, then completed a bachelor's degree in communications in Banja Luka, then went back for additional postgraduate studies in Leicester, UK. That was in archaeology. And 7 years ago, I got the scholarship from the Chevening Foundation and went back to Scotland to study tourism, heritage and development postgraduate degree. When I came back, I continued working in mixture of communication and heritage and culture-related initiatives for some time with the Office of the EU Ambassador to Bosnia and Herzegovina, and for the past 4.5 years, actually till a month ago, with the USAID Tourism Project, where I had position of director for northern region of Bosnia and Herzegovina.
What did you like best, Scotland or England?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know. In England, I used to live in Surbiton, that's not far away from London. It's considered to be part of London periphery. In Scotland, I had an opportunity to live in the southern of Scotland, in Dumfries and Galloway region, and then I spent half of time in Glasgow. Well, I consider them British, basically, although somehow Scottish are more close to my nature because they seem to be more transparent in communication, more direct, and you know. So.
Is it maybe that the if you go right back in deep into history, people from this region where we're sat today, in Banja Luka, you know, they say, well, actually, we're Celts, and the Scots are famous for their Celticness. Do you think that's a true thing? That maybe that's why you feel that affinity?
Maybe, but Scots, I would say, would more consider themselves Gaelish. Because when I was there 6 or 7 years ago, they were resurrecting their Gaelic language, basically reintroducing the Gaelic language courses. And they've always had two language signs, you know, at the entrance of towns and some places, which I did find fascinating. Not many of them actually understand each other in, you know, speaking English. different regions because they have different dialects, etc. So, as for the English, there would probably be more Normans.
I would agree with that. We're here to talk about tourism today. So how is Bosnia and Herzegovina currently perceived as a tourist destination on the international stage? And how would that, or does it, differ from how local people view it?
Well, I think nowadays Bosnia internationally is being perceived as attractive, interesting, probably fully undiscovered destination compared to, I don't know, period of some 10 or 15 years ago when it was not known as destination at all. People didn't perceive it as a tourism-related country at all. I know that because during several projects that I worked on, we did international surveys amongst the tour operators, which showed that they were not aware of Bosnia and Herzegovina as potential tourism spot. Although many people here believe that Bosnia and Herzegovina had negative image because of the 1990s conflict and everything that happened, people were somehow convinced that potential international visitors had negative image or picture of Bosnia and Herzegovina, but it wasn't the case actually. They didn't have picture at all. It was not there. During past several years, a lot has been done, not only by international projects or USAID project that I worked for, but many local actors have been doing a lot on improving both image and tourism offering in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Both, for instance, Bosnia and Herzegovina entities, relevant ministries of tourism, have adopted quite contemporary strategies for tourism development. So now they do have a framework that didn't exist before. I mean, Bosnia and Herzegovina as a single destination is very, very hard to be promoted because we don't have a state tourism promotion agency or something like that. So it's very difficult to have a systematic or unified promotional effort outside. But with the new legal frameworks in place and the way that relevant ministries in the countries cooperate with each other, I think provides for very solid foundation for a good promotion of Bosnia and Herzegovina. In addition, the project that I worked for, which is USAID Tourism or USAID Project for Sustainable Tourism Development in Bosnia and Herzegovina, has done a lot on promotion of Bosnia and Herzegovina at international markets. We cooperated a lot with the global players, right, like UN tourism organization, TripAdvisor, Expedia, Groupations, number of international relevant international magazines for which we organize press trips and visits to Bosnia and Herzegovina. Country branding index done by a Bloomberg organization has changed for better for Bosnia and Herzegovina during the past few years. But the analysis that have been done meanwhile have showed actually that the promotional effort that was done by the country actors at the time was not in symphony with the market demand. Basically, they were promoting what they thought should be promoted. Instead of analyzing more in-depth market trends, seeing what is it that is in demand amongst potential international travelers, what's happening with the changing trends on the tourism market, because trends are obviously changing more towards to exactly what Bosnia and Herzegovina has to offer. I think that our project and together with the Bosnia and Herzegovina relevant public and private sector actors managed to shift situation for better during past 4 to 5 years. And I think that now local population residents, ordinary residents, are beginning to comprehend the potential and not only potential, but the offering that Bosnia and Herzegovina currently has actually in terms of tourism experiences, trips, one-day trips, several-day programs, etc. There are many, many more small so-called boutique tour operators being established and coming up with very interesting offer and itineraries. So I think Bosnia and Herzegovina tourism is on very, very good course at the moment.
In your experience, what are the greatest strengths for Bosnia Herzegovina when it comes to attracting and hosting tourists?
I think the greatest strength is, besides our really, truly amazing nature landscape, because it's really, it's just amazing when you start traveling across the country. I think the most attractive feature of Bosnia and Herzegovina are its people, basically, local residents, because local residents are very, not well versed in tourism, so when you talk to them, you're not going to get this touristic speech from them. They're not going to pretend to have something they don't. They're going to be very straightforward, and generally speaking, on individual level, they're, most of them are very, very friendly and ready, you know, to help, ready to even go beyond their, out of their way to provide whatever you can ask for. And they're willing to show their culture, they're willing to show their way of life, they're willing to talk, you know, they're willing to describe, even to teach visitors how to cook their traditional meals, you know, to tell them about local attractions in their areas that have some meanings for them and that might not be so well known in a public discourse or in promotional material, etc.
You've been involved, as you said, for some time in heritage-based tourism. So how can that cultural heritage act as a, how can I say, a driver, if you will, for economic development and rather than a decorative backdrop? Because when you look at a lot, that, especially online, the videos that you see on TV channels, they're also decorative. It doesn't tell you the true story of what you're going to find.
Yeah, that's true. Well, heritage does hold enormous potential, not only in Bosnia and Herzegovina, but it is its intrinsic feature for both economic and social development. I can maybe illustrate it best with several examples, for instance, that have been commodified recently. One of them is Dajak in Banja Luka, its traditional river boat that's been punted against the current of river. And it's probably, as far as we know, so far unique in that in the world. And it was considered a recreational activity for local residents. There is a story that it dates back, I don't know, that's as old as Banja Luka is, but the documented or photographed evidence of Dajak on Vrbas River goes back to Austro-Hungarian times. So that's something we can pinpoint. And apparently it was used to transfer goods across the river because it was cheaper, faster, etc. So for decades, local residents of Banja Luka used Dajak for recreational purposes, organizing these local level Dajak races, etc. And only a few years ago, they started thinking about turning it into a tourism product, which did happen 2 or 3 years ago when they created 7 different Dajak trips catering to different audiences. So basically, you have, you know, trips made for, I don't know, romantic couples, for instance, in the evening, watching sunset or something like that.
With a glass of champagne, I believe.
With a glass, yes. People started increasingly booking Dajak for weddings, for instance. They implemented very targeted digital media campaign, promoting, included Dajak into one of the signature experiences of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And having done that, they managed to raise awareness and appreciations among local residents of Dajak, which then led to Dajak being used for a number of produced items. So now you can see, you can find items branded with Dajak in bookstores around Banja Luka. You can find a tray in the shape of Dajak in one of the hotels that's used for serving rakia. You can find Dajak in some of the shopping malls as a symbol of Banja Luka. Basically, by commodifying, maybe better to say promoting Dajak and recognizing its cultural value for Banja Luka, and at the same time selling it as attraction, tourism attraction for visitors coming to Banja Luka, they managed to to spark interest among different groups of population, like artists, craftsmen, you know, to engage their creativity and come up with a series of a new products. So that's basically direct economic and social impact of heritage being used for not only tourism, but the development purposes in general. And there are many, many similar initiatives with other heritage pieces around Bosnia and Herzegovina. Architectural building heritage is a separate issue because it really requires much more investment. It requires much more expertise because you need a different profile of experts to be involved with that. But when it comes to living heritage, like dayakis or like certain crafts are, or food preparation is, it's much, much easier and less costly to put it into use and make a product out of that. There are many small tour operators that offer to their visitors very specific trips or programs, including preparation of traditional products like ajvar, which has been done here but in generations by families, you know. During the autumn, they would collect vegetables and make ajvar, which is a meal that you can use as a salad. You can put on only on bread if you want or something. Now they're offering preparation of ajvar. They even organize rakia distillation for visitors during certain periods of years. You can book now reenactment of Slava, which is famous, and I think that's even UNESCO protected, but by Serbia. Slava celebration, which is a family patron's day. And I think that especially smaller communities are finding heritage is very, very resourceful asset when it comes to both tourism and their general local development.
I was talking to somebody last year about the Dayak, and I said, why at that time was it not as promoted as it is now? And I said, because it's so Banja Luka. And the reply was, David, do you know how many people from Banja Luka have actually taken a Dayak? He said, you'd be amazed how few people have done it, and yet how everybody says you must go and visit the Kozara, the local mountain range, the national park just outside Banja Luka. But very few people from Banja Luka have actually gone and done that, been out there. Is that something that's endemic across the whole country, that people are not really aware of what wonderful things they have on their doorstep and how they can contribute to it?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Especially it was true until COVID, but I think COVID was sort of a turning point, because during COVID pandemic, people were not allowed to travel, obviously, outside of their places of residence. And many people have used that time, you know, to visit places around their home cities or other regions of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And where, I mean, judging by the comments I personally read on internet or, you know, certain blogs and saw on locally produced videos, people were astonished with the natural beauties and some other features that were just, you know, a few kilometers away. I personally had an experience with a friend that grew up in Banja Luka. I went to primary school with her and secondary school, and didn't know about Krupa na Vrbas, water cascades.
You're joking.
No, I'm not. No, and more importantly, when I took her there, she was like, oh, I didn't know about this. And a few days later, she told me, and she said that her husband didn't know about that either, so she took him there to see. So, this so-called domestic tourism is one of the great potentials that we as society need also to tap into. I mean, during COVID, so many people discovered the Ice Lakes, Pliva Lakes. I personally also went there during summer for swimming, because everything else was obviously banned. And you can spend there days, because they have very nice, you know, nice, very safe swimming spots on a place after the lakes. I heard that last year they introduced toilets and dressing rooms, so you do have some much needed infrastructure there. You have restaurants, coffee bars around. I mean, what else would you need for a couple of days of rest? And it's pure nature. It's just, you know, woods, and there are not many buildings around, not much infrastructure. So it's really still very much unspoiled, still very much wild, I would say.
Brings me on to slow tourism, which is a word that's being thrown about a lot, but I sometimes think people don't actually understand the meaning of it. But how can the country, especially in the rural areas, like up here in the north, the Ukraine, which not many people know about at all, how can that tap into this movement of slow tourism in a meaningful way? Is it an easy thing to do?
Well, I don't think it's too easy, but I don't think it's too hard nowadays. I mean, slow food has been introduced in the Herzegovina region, and I think in some areas around Sarajevo. And even certain local providers have joined this international slow food movement and became members of some of the slow food organizations, which helped them a lot in terms of promoting themselves, networking with like-minded people, reaching adequate or appropriate audiences. And as for Ukraine, yeah, things take longer because in Herzegovina, they're much closer, obviously, to the Dalmatian coast, and they do have regular influx of visitors from Dubrovnik and the surrounding area. And Ukraine has been less population lives in Ukraine. We have to face that there are many more people living in southern part of the country. They are closer to major tourism destinations, so it's much easier for them to tap into existing networks and channels of communication and everything than for Ukraine. But I also noticed that certain individuals and groups serious about tourism development have started to form. Some of them have been legally registered already in Ukraine. There's been some online effort to promote Ukraine assets, although I'm not sure how deep it is. I mean, as far as I could see, it's only promotion, you know, like of the locations. Didn't see much of the offer. But I know that many local communities around this part of the country have been working really hard, like, you know, municipal departments, tourism boards where they exist. They've been really trying to. The point here is to network existing service providers or potential service providers, because they will find it easier to get needed information, maybe some additional instructions. People are still not sure how to take whatever they're doing right now that step further. Sometimes they just need a very, very smooth push into their back to move. I don't think it will be harder, but somebody needs to do it. Somebody needs to work on it. I mean, it's not going to happen on its own.
Do you think that's...
I know for sure that visitors' number are increasing, even for Ukraine region. And they're not increasing in small amounts. Una Sana canton in Bihać area, where National Park Una is, I think last year already registered increase of 30%, which is quite some increase in number of visitors. And many of them come for like real holiday, you know, they stay 7-8 days. They're mainly from Western Europe, like Netherlands, Germany, Austria, and this part of the Europe. And that trend is spilling over towards Banja Luka as well. I mean, till 2 or 3 years ago, you could hardly see groups of tourists going, you know, around Banja Luka with a guide in front of them. Now you can see them. Now you can see them regularly, especially during summer season.
This question is it brings things a little bit closer to home. It's 30 years now of stability and peace in the country. You've worked in peace building and community development. Do you think tourism has a role to play in helping healing existing divides and fostering social harmony in BIH? In other words, that it is a tool that will help the people who live in this country?
Yes, I firmly believe so. I mean, I'm not as, you know, idealist to believe that tourism can solve the problems that other disciplines or sectors cannot It can certainly contribute to this process, because I've seen it with my eyes, you know, while working in tourism development during past 20 years. I've seen and I participated in many activities, including people of different ethnic backgrounds, people living in different regions of Bosnia and Herzegovina, sitting at the same table, designing itineraries together, helping to each other to improve their respective offers, putting each other into contact with their partners, you know, to help them develop their businesses, because they figured out we are very small community, small destination. Speaking about tourism, and if they want to make significant progress, they have to cooperate. It really doesn't make any sense, for instance, to be selling Banja Luka offer without including into that offer trip to Jajce. It's insane, because it's only 60 minutes drive, and it's really, European attraction. And vice versa, you can't have a visitors staying in Jajce without going to see, for instance, Šipovo, which is like 30 kilometers away. It's another entity. People of different ethnic background live there. And it's such a nice destination that it was even included in Time Out magazine this year as one of the, I think, most beautiful recreational or picnic spots in the world or something like that. So tourism really requires people to cooperate. They need to exchange information. They need to create itineraries that cross the lines, either municipal lines, you know, within one entity, or inter-entity lines, ethnic lines or whatever. And I've seen it work, because I was part of the project's preparing and delivering international promotions at the different international fairs, where Bosnia and Herzegovina tourism actors would go and present offer together, be at the same boat, and jointly do their job on promoting whatever they have to offer.
I get the impression that you're so passionate about this that sometimes that you would get a little bit frustrated at the lack of pace and the lack of achievement. So to finish this off, if I could give you a magic wand now and you could change just one thing in the tourism sector of Bosnia and Herzegovina today, what would it be and why?
Well, if possible, magically, I would put into contact local residents, you know, especially in rural areas, and people still practicing certain local crafts or any rituals or anything that has a long history, with creative people and with relevant universities. Because sometimes, and that's something that I experienced, sometimes all it takes for people is to get this so-called external validation, you know. I mean, they do their thing. They make beautiful meals under the bell. They make opanak, for instance, handmade leather, traditional leather shoe. But they need somebody from outside to come and tell them, well, that's exactly what we are interested in. You know, it does have a value at the market. You can make some business of it, and you should be proud of cherishing that skill. I've seen that, because I've seen people that were included in tourism offer, were brought visitors for the first time. They've seen the pride and the exhilaration on their faces when they realize that the international visitors, very often speaking language they don't even understand, appreciate what they have to show or tell them, you know, stories they tell about their lives or their ancestors' lives or current culture of living or whatever. So I think that's something, but I mean, unfortunately, it's going to take some time, because if these people had readily available information about not only history, I'm not speaking about history as such, they don't need that, but sometimes I will just give you one example. For instance, just a few kilometers away from Šipovo, there is a Roman inscription still engraved in a rock in one of the smaller river canyons that used to mark a border between two Illyrian tribes 2,050 years ago, in 40 years Anno Domini, as they would say. And that inscription is still there. You can go, weather has done its job. Obviously, it's covered now by grass and by soil, but you can still see half of it above the surface. And if you try to see what's beneath, you can see it written as if it was written yesterday. And it's one of the rare so-called border stones still in the same place where it was originally. And if people knew, you know, these stories if they could read about the importance what they had have in their vicinity, I think they would be more more self-confident to use that to create their own products, be it souvenir, art piece, piece of clothing with the motive of a certain from their certain motive from their surrounding, etc. And creative people, when I say creative people, I think of people like designers, social media experts, people that know how to visually present their stories, nice matters. So if we somehow manage to make this link and make this information and skills available to much wider society group, development of tourism would take much, much faster pace.
Alexandra Drinic there. I hope you enjoyed this thoughtful conversation with her. Her insights into Bosnia and Herzegovina's growing tourism sector paints an encouraging picture, one where cultural depth, authentic experiences, and lesser-known destinations truly shine. As Alexandra shared, this country is not just a destination. It's an experience waiting to be discovered. So whether you're planning a trip or just curious about this fascinating part of Europe, Bosnia and Herzegovina offers something truly unique. And if you'd like to explore further, why not visit my Substack at the Coffee and Rakia blog, or my website at anenglishmaninthebalkans, that's all one word, .com, where you'll find extra content, photos and updates on upcoming episodes. And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. It really helps more people find these Balkan stories. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, vidimo se uskoro.